Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the ongoing evolution of our consciousness and how that's showing up in many different ways. Tonight I'm talking to two leaders in the field, two people who have really dedicated their lives to this collective awakening. They're Patricia Albert and Jeff Carrera, and they together have formed something called the Evolutionary Collective, evolutionarycollective.com, where they're creating conversations about this collective awareness, this collective evolutionary moment in our history. Welcome, Patricia and Jeff.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, Alan.
Thanks very much for having us.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you because what you're doing, and from what I've seen at your website, evolutionarycollective.com, is very much in line with what I've been writing about the artist's role in creating new realities. So it's as if information is coming through our creative mind and actually giving us new levels of awareness to evolve the collective. That's how I see it. Do you see it that way or slightly different? Jeff, do you want to talk?
Sure. I mean, I think there's probably different ways we could look at this. But in terms of what you just brought up, it so happens that Patricia and I just led a 3-day event, an orientation event this past weekend, and we were using that metaphor of the question being, what if we look at our collective spiritual practice, not using the metaphor of a spiritual path, but using the metaphor of an artwork, and in doing that, getting clear about the aesthetic of our relationships. What is the feeling quality of them? What is the, in artistic terms, what is the aesthetic? And how can that aesthetic pervade more and more of the lives that we're living? And I think it creates a valuable metaphor. It's a valuable way to look at emerging consciousness, which often occurs first in artistic form, long before it manifests in other more concrete ways, and how can we spread that consciousness to more and more of our lives? So that's not all of what Patricia and I are doing, but it happened to be the theme of the weekend we just led this past weekend.
Well, I agree with that, but Patricia, why don't you talk about what it means when you say aesthetic, or when you're suggest that word? I'm not sure exactly what you mean about aesthetics of one's life and spiritual practice.
Okay. Well, here's the wonderful sort of conundrum that we're in. So the work that we're doing, like you said, the leading edge of consciousness at this point is not our individual consciousness. It's really what's happening between people and how do you activate the potentials that can really happen between people, two people, a group. That sense of unity is kind of like where the action is. And as we've been working with, very committed, larger and larger committed groups of people, what we're discovering is rather than education, right, rather than even transformation, even though it's transformational, it's not the right word. Even us as teachers, it's not, we haven't come up with the right definition, but the way in which this work is occurring is much more from the realm of the mystical, sort of the ineffable quality of something that's happening between people that's mystical rather than just between me and the divine. And we kept, the way people are speaking and the kind of impact that this is having in their lives is much more like an art form than it is, I'm growing and my, their lives are changing profoundly, but it doesn't have this feeling like I'm growing and healing and, I've changed so much. It has more to do with this sort of emergent art form that your life becomes that is profound and way more interesting, as far as, it's just different. It's got a very different feeling entirely.
No, I get what you're saying because in a way I think I lived my life as an art form and yeah, and relied on creativity or being creative in the moment to meet the unknown. I think that's what creativity does, is not have a formula for its encounters with evolution. Would you say that?
And that's what's so different, Alan, because so much of what's being sort of sold on the marketplace, the spiritual marketplace, or the, you know, the whatever you want to call it, you know, self-improvement, right. is, you know, what are the five steps to this? And what are the particular, you know, access points, and how do you achieve? And we could teach you how to do this and do that. And that's not what we're doing. I mean, what we're enacting together and with the people, and the people that are coming are obviously very open, very willing. You know, they're not just waking up to that there's a different world that you can enter into. It's together. There's like this emergent way of discovering something that's very new together, like you said, like a creative art form. Mm-hmm. And the wild thing is the impact on your life is 10 times faster, more effortless. I mean, people's lives are being transformed right, left, and center, but we're not focusing on their lives.
Right. You're focusing on something that is beyond their lives. I just read Jeff's latest post on the art and the evolution of consciousness on your website. He says art through history is an attempt to capture new experiences of consciousness and give others access to that consciousness or to that feeling. Yeah. And I think if you have this collective, then you are each supply improvising in a sense, which is a great art form. It's what jazz is. It's you're improvising on levels of consciousness that are new in the moment. Would that be fair to say something like that, Jeff?
Well, Alan, you're hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Patricia and I have in coming up with a name, not, you know, because she and I don't have a teaching per se, but we do have a way of working mm-hmm. with people. And what we refer to that, it's a little complex, but it works for us. We refer to it as improvisational transformative poetics.
Okay,
so it's improvisational because we make it up on the spot. You know, it's you come together with a group of people and you allow yourself through connection with the field of relationship to continually respond spontaneously to the needs of the moment. Just like a jazz musician would do in a jazz performance.
Wow. I get that. Yeah. It's
transformational because it's aimed at, you know, an ongoing embrace of wherever evolution is taking us.
Mm. And you know where I feel it's taking us, and I think you hit upon it in that essay, probably in all your work, is to feel new feelings, to have new experiences that all outside the frame of language even. And that's why arts are about the transformation of language or beyond something beyond language and pure feeling from one to another.
That's right. And to finish with that thought, Alan, because you just said it can't be captured in language, which is why we use the word poetics.
Mm-hmm.
Because often when we use language in a prosaic form, we're trying to nail down definitions of things. And we're working, when you work at the edge of consciousness, you can't use language to pin things down. You have to use language poetically to point towards the thing itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't ever be able to pin it down. So you have to use language in a different way if you want to stay very close to what's emerging.
Right. I think T.S. Eliot called poetry the raid on the inarticulate.
Yeah.
And throughout all of history, I mean, I would look at those poets, Whitman, he was an incredible mystic, and Eliot, and even Emerson, they understood that their consciousness was hooked up into a cosmic creativity.
It's also, beautiful. Too, Alan, I love what you're saying, because you're so, you know, you're so in the same.
Yeah, I love what your guys are saying.
Yeah, I know, the other great poets are the lovers.
Right.
It's the mystics and the lovers. And, you know, one of the terms, you know, that we've used for, you know, first of all, the work that we do leads into, so there are different forms of it, obviously, that are, you know, less committed, you know, more temporary things that people can do. But it leads towards the evolutionary collective, which is a committed group of people that's growing. And the commitment is to actually bring forth the new paradigm of a higher order of human relatedness and really stabilize and grow a different, like you said, something beyond the normal psychological way that we usually relate to each other.
Right. But psychology has, I think, reached its expiration date in the sense that it doesn't define or even make sense of some of the experiences that people are having beyond psychology. I mean, it has its place, but now we're reaching the edges of what it can hold. It's an old paradigm in a sense.
Absolutely.
And it's well said, Alan, because I think psychology deals very well with the part of us that's psychological, but we aren't limited to psychological experience.
Right.
You know? And I feel like the work that Patricia and I are doing really is, you know, it addresses deeper levels of the soul than the psychology defines.
Well, psychology will never define the soul, at least in the old Freudian terminologies. That's why we need to have something like a metapsychology or what you're doing, because I think what's happening now collectively is we're expanding our ability to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a little esoteric, but I call psychology the world of the mental emotional realities, kind of the fourth dimension, where and the body is the third dimension, but we're moving into a higher dimension of nonverbal, not undefined awareness. That's what I call it.
And also, Alan, too, that, you know, I've called it sort of the multiple beloveds. There's an intensity of love and connection from that sort of Rumian Shams kind of place that's real. I mean, we've had, you know, like we do the people that are in the group, you know, there's a really profound way. I'm not even sure how we came upon it. I'm sure it's part of the innovativeness, but there's a level of commitment and there's a quality of commitment that's present where people are 100% there, and they really are, and they are over time. So people make an initial commitment of like a year. And you know, I mean, you've been in a million groups. You know, most people are ambivalent and this, and, you know, there's always stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. I mean, it's kind of, I keep looking around waiting for the shoe to drop, but we've been in it for 9 months, and people's clarity and fullness in their being present with each other and with this process is so spectacular that there are certain kinds of, I'm going to assert, there's elements of the sacred that will not presence themselves with a lesser commitment.
I love that. I mean, that I guess that hits upon what you're really after, the sacred, the feeling of life itself. What did Joseph Campbell, it says, we're not looking for the meaning of life, we're looking to feel life.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that can't be qualified within a psychological framework. It has to be experience. So,
Even, Alan, a temporary course, or, you know, it could even be, you know, people go on retreats and they have amazing experiences, but then it's like there's no particular commitment to each other that's ongoing, that's being developed, that, you know, these sort of invisible threads that are weaving and deepening and making certain access to the divine possible. So, and out of that, you know, the crazy thing is, you know, you and I have experienced, you know, sort of being incredibly in love. And when you're deeply in love and it's real, it's not just some, you know, temporary hormonal thing, your life changes. Mm-hmm. Your perspective changes. You know, what you see as possible changes. And so we have a sustained way, like, you know, two of the women, you know, one of the women was saying, she goes, it's kind of crazy. It's like, I'm like in love. I feel in love with this other woman. And it has nothing to do with some kind of a sexual anything, you know. And one of the women in the course is a beautiful French woman who's an artist and who's 85. And she was going, oh, Patricia, you know, with her accent, she was saying, when I was in love with, you know, this guy she was in love with way back, she goes, Danielle, I felt these bouts of, you know, these emotions of this kind of being in love. She goes, I have that all the time now.
So is that the commitment to, is that the underlying theme of this evolutionary collective, the sense of that, I guess they call that agape, that kind of feeling of universal love.
Well, there seems to be that as the air, you know, there's a fabric of that in the substance of what we're doing that is constant and it's growing. But then, like, you know, you were saying, and Jeff was talking about, that seems to be the medium for the creativity.
Oh, I see. I see.
The relatedness is like the clay, you know, like that level of relatedness is this beautiful, gorgeous marble that you're going to work with.
Right.
Then things become revealed and things start to happen and things are showing up in people's lives. And, you know, it's like, and I think that that's what the divine wants, is it wants people to come together in a particular way so that then something can be created.
You know what? A couple of books just come to mind that I've been focusing on while I'm writing this idea about the artist's role in creating new realities is M.C. Richards' work. Do you know her work on centering? That's a beautiful book. Mm-mm. And then there's also Raymond Williams, who was a kind of a social critic from the 60s, who talked about, his book is called The Long Revolution. And The Long Revolution is just that, the ability for society to evolve to a place of love, healing, and collective harmony.
Wow. And
yeah, yeah, those are two really good writers that I think talk to where you're coming from and in different ways, but
we seem to be enacting that sculpture.
Right.
You know, we seem to be busy with that sculpture.
But you know what you're saying, Patricia and Jeff, is what I had the problem with Wilbur's theory of everything, because he had the top of his motto, thought, you know, it comes down to thinking. And I said to Ken Wilbur himself a couple of years ago when he was in New York, I said, don't you think feeling comes before thought? And he goes, you may be right, but I can't think about it right now. So, but I like where you are going with that. So, Jeff, then why don't you talk about how you enact that within a group?
Well, one thing I would say, Alan, is, you know, a minute ago you said, is our commitment to this experience of agape. And I think it's more interesting to note that, you know, we don't have a particular experience, a commitment to a particular experience. It's more fascinating that if you get the right people in together, and you create an atmosphere and a way of working, which is what you're just asking about, where people can really open up to one another, then that sense of agape is what naturally arises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it wouldn't be as powerful if it was somehow being manipulated into existence or generated sort of self-consciously.
But you hold the space for it, it seems. You hold, both of you hold a space for something to occur.
Absolutely we do. I mean, we bring people together and we have them interact in different ways. We're improvising in the sense that we're reading the space, and then we're giving to the space the kinds of interactions that seem to be called for. And you know, we use content, and the content's constantly changing. But the content is really a vehicle mm-hmm. for the relatedness. And what we're really creating, as you said, it's a space for relationship. Mm-hmm. It's a space for profound interaction that, you know, inevitably lead people to deep places of intimacy and respect and love and joy, and that, you know, naturally arises every time.
Well, it sounds very shamanic in the sense that you hold the space of the sacred. Is that true, Patricia? Is it kind of shamanic in that sense where...
Let me tell you what it looks
yes.
like a little bit, just so it's not, you know, completely amorphous.
Yes.
And we're not, you know, the forms change, right? So we're not committed to forms, but there are certain things that have shown themselves. So there's a way that we do a practice where two people will sit across from each other and begin to inquire into, you know, like, what are you experiencing right now, with a very loose definition of who you are. So there's a quality in that practice where people get more and more able to let go of any particular sense of I.
Right.
And they get completely out of their concepts. So you get very precise, very distinct about exactly what is there in as many dimensions as possible in each moment. So you get attuned to be able to, it's like a wine taster or something. It's like that's a practice where people learn how to taste very specifically what's there.
Right. And I know that space, you know, like you said, we've all done hundreds of workshops. The idea, and I think you probably bring that up, is how do you bring that awareness back into your everyday life? Because that's really where it counts, into your personal relationships, your one-on-one moments, you know, the kids are crying, all that, you know. So how do you do that?
Well, here's the thing. What happens is that, you know, that was just the beginning of a practice. I mean, it grows from there, so that you start to have a more multidimensional sense of yourself. Like, you're no longer, like, people were having a hard time saying I in this last 3 days because you couldn't really say it was you. You know, I mean, there's something where your sense of identity starts to loosen up. What happens in the rest of the world, rather than you have some particular personal consciousness that gets developed and then you're trying to remember how to be that way when your life is happening, what happens in the commitment with everyone is that you're living inside of a certain field of relatedness for at least that year. And in that field of relatedness, you've been in a Buddha field, you know, you yes. know what it's like when everyone's physically together, your consciousness is altered. Mm-hmm. Only we're discovering how to do that with people because of the level of commitment. Even though we're not physically all together, we have people from Europe and Australia and America, right, coming together, you know, live 3 times a year. And then we have other virtual connections. You can actually feel the Buddha field. I mean, you can actually feel this consciousness that we're in and that's changing us all the time.
And I guess the longer you
that's important.
Yeah, and I guess the more that becomes familiar to you, the more you start to resonate with that field, because it is a field, or yeah. It's what Eckhart Tolle, I love his book, The New Earth, and he says, you're not living life, life is living you, and therefore life is living all of us, and in a way that's the same essence. That's
right.
That's the Buddha field.
Can you imagine, Alan, like if you were a part of, let's say, you know, there's 100 people that are really committed, really open, you know, really awake, really ready to, like, you know, and human. They're definitely human. But you're building this stronger and stronger connection with all the different people and with the whole field together, and you've been in that for a year. Mm-hmm. The kind of potentials and the way that you feel empowered and held is huge.
Yes, and why can't we then have that Buddha field cover the planet? I mean, imagine the whole of humanity in that.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, that's our commitment, but to build a larger and larger intensity, so if you have 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 people, but in an intensified field that way, it will spread out, and it does change the way that you are with other people, but you have to build this, you know, it's like the culture of, you know, like a yoga culture. I mean, you have to build it so that it's really strong, and then you can spread it.
Now, I just wonder how this relates to a bit of the background you guys come from. I know Jeff was a big part of the Andrew Cohen organization, and how does that build on some of the ideas that you learned with Andrew and his, what does he call it, evolutionary awakening?
Evolutionary enlightenment.
Enlightenment, yes, yes.
Well, Alan, one thing I think to be, I mean, one thing is just so it's clear, I am still very, you know, connected with Andrew and with Enlighten Next.
Yeah.
And, you know, while doing this work with Patricia and the Evolutionary Collective, and that kind of brings into this conversation a different facet of what we're doing, which we sometimes refer to this work as being translineage.
Okay.
And it feels like, and I'll tell you, I'm sure you've already experienced this, there's a real energy behind the fact that people, regardless of what path has brought them to this point, many people are feeling the energy of wanting to connect, not to have to let go of the path they're on,
mm-hmm. you
know, and cut their cord with it, but to be able to reach beyond it and connect with others who found their way to the same place via a different route.
Yes, that is where hopefully we're all coming to.
Right.
Yes.
And, you know, and so that makes Patricia and I a perfect teaching team, you know, because we really are teaching as a team. And I've taught with other people before, particularly in the context of evolutionary enlightenment. And in other places, but usually, you know, it's like tandem teaching. You know, you're teaching side by side. But Patricia and I are really, you know, our work together, our relationship, and how we're both being enriched by each other's backgrounds is really the source. It's the deepest source of what it is that we have to share with people.
But isn't this exactly, I mean, what Patricia was saying, you're saying, isn't this evolutionary enlightenment in a sense? I mean,
I think it certainly has a lot of similarities with evolutionary enlightenment. I mean, you know, obviously I'm steeped in both.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely familiar. I think in evolutionary enlightenment, you know, in the work that I'm doing with Andrew Cohen and with the community there, there's one of the big differences is in that work. There's a definite path.
Okay.
You know, there's a beautiful path called evolutionary enlightenment, and there's five tenets that one lives by, and they are incredible, and I teach them every week to different groups. And I bring the spirit of those, at least, with me into this work because it's so much a part of who I am, I can't not. So of course, anything that I'm involved with will be infused with,
right.
with that energy. But as we said earlier, Patricia and I aren't, we really are, I think, pioneering a way of working as teachers, which is ongoingly improvisational and which is responding to what's happening in the moment and which doesn't have a teaching per se.
Go ahead, Patricia. Yeah.
I think too that is, I think there are a lot of people like yourself, you know, where you've had lots of experience, right? You know,
millions of teachers and workshops and all of that, yes.
And there's so many of us at this point, and there are younger people as well that are masters. I mean, we have, you know, I've had some of the you know, the leading integral teachers in the group. I mean, we have people that are really, you know, like have been teaching other disciplines for 20 years. I mean, these are masters. So there is a place where you also want to come together where who you are is invited instead of that you're asked to be receptive one more time and listen and absorb and, you know. It's more that there's something being evoked in the room. And in a way, just even like Jeff and I, like there's a DNA that I have and there's a DNA that he has innately because of all of his experience and all of what I have. It's not that we're teaching each other something, it's that our beingness by being together is creating something new.
Right. No, it sounds very exciting. It sounds revolutionary in the sense that you're willing to let go of everything that you were to be something that you're becoming, the unknown.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's what improv, and that's what the great, well, like you said, jazz musicians, but I think it's all the great artists were improvising with an unknown reality, an unknown awareness, and they were, in a sense, channeling the forces of the universe through their personality to create something new that they didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, and that's who this is for. It's like if you want to learn classical music with, you know, the written music and a particular way of learning how to play a particular instrument, that's available and that's out there. This is for those of us who want to bring who they are and bring what's already there and then let go and discover what is possible in creating something together. So you know, there's a certain maturity, I think, that's being asked for too, and willingness and humility.
Right. And right. So and you come from that place of pure love, and it's like love, that feeling of agape, leads the way. Is that what really, as you get people to this place or they come to this place, then what comes next? Okay, everybody's in love, and then what?
Yeah,
well,
right, right.
Well, it's a good point. I think the metaphor of love can be misleading if it's limited to only a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because it's really, you know, that's why I use the word aesthetic. An artistic aesthetic is more than just a feeling. It's a kind of sensual quality of the work. And so the relatedness in the evolutionary collective has a certain quality to it. And that creates a very solid, a very deep and profound base to work from. And then a lot of work has to occur in people's lives. And that's, you know, you asked about evolutionary enlightenment and the evolutionary collective. One of the other differences is in the work that we do in Enlighten Next, we are really creating a culture. It's a culture that's in some ways, at least at the very edge of that work, you know, we've created a culture that's quite amazing and quite in its own world. Mm-hmm. And is exploring.
Like a subculture.
It's like a subculture. And you're in that context, you're able to explore things that you couldn't explore otherwise.
Well, like what specifically do you mean?
Well, in other words, the amount of spiritual practice that we were able to do as a community and the kind of spiritual breakthroughs that resulted came from the fact that we had created a culture that allowed for that to happen.
Right.
Now, if you're a busy person with a very responsible position in the world, you're not going to be, I mean, we were doing practice more or less morning till night for years. That just can't happen.
Right.
And so in the evolutionary collective, you know, I think we're, you know, the way that Patricia and I initially got into this, and she was very intrigued by the power of what she saw in Light Next and saw that I had gotten from it, and started a conversation with me about how could you take some of the fruits of that work and put it in a form that would allow people to touch into it while also maintaining truly successful lives and getting results in those lives. And that was the conversation that began our path of, you
right.
know, that culminated in working together.
Right. And I think as people get into that space, it's not about just being, but there's an action. Like as an art,
yeah.
there's a response. I mean, the artists do what they do because of this basic human desire to express what's going on inside of us and in relationship to what's outside of us. So,
yeah.
I mean, just as an example, I just want to say, like, the jazz musicians or the abstract artists in the New York school were doing these nonlinear forms because and this is my theory and creativity, is because the life, the urban life, the city that we were then forming, the life of the city was very random and abstract itself in the connection. So that needed to be expressed in music and image. And,
right.
Cool.
And that gave people a renewed sense of their own experience. So when you look at a Jackson Pollock painting, you're experiencing the chaos, but within a limited frame. Just like when you walk out into the streets in New York, you're experiencing that same chaos, but you have your own framework for it. That's how I analyze it and the importance of art.
I love the way that you're thinking. Some of the results that have been happening is there are partnerships forming. There are people that are sort of finding kind of perfect. I mean, one of the things that has gotten stronger for everybody is when you go into sort of, you know, if you would use the spiral dynamics perspective, you know, sort of a second tier turquoise for people that makes sense, way of being with one another from a cultural standpoint, you get really finished with trying to be everything. So your sense of your own originality and your own mastery becomes more refined so that you realize that you really want to do something with other people that have their particular gift and that it fits, kind of like Jeff and I.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're so perfect together as teachers. You know, I had no idea that it would be this exponentially amazing to teach with another master teacher who's like perfect for me, right?
Right.
So you're
improvising together. You're like, right, like an orchestra, jazz.
And we're finding that people in the EC, the Evolutionary Collective, are some of the results that are happening is they're finding, you know, interesting, they're attracting partners and different kinds of creative projects and stuff that are really attuned to their highest gift. And it's really cool. And then we're sort of struggling together also with, you know, the old forms, the old ways to do things together in the world, financially or legally or whatever, you know, don't quite fit. So then we're in a conversation of like, how do you do things differently? How do you do it from this higher consciousness? And so, you know, there's a lot of results, and there's also a lot of having to discover, because it's new territory.
Right. But if you say, I mean, I just would love an example of what you said about someone touching in with their highest gifts. Like, what would that be and some of the cases that came up in your workshops?
Well, there's two women that are in the course. One has four children under 10, and the other one has three and flies in from Australia. Okay. So these are busy women.
Yeah.
And, you know, married and beautiful and lovely. And, you know, they are creating something. I can't say exactly what it is, but it has to do with something with technology that will merge technology with a kind of transformation. And one of them had an idea, and the other one, you know, and they're coming together, and they're, you know, getting backers. I mean, it's kind of crazy, you know, like how.
Oh, so they're living their dreams in a way, you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, and that's happening, you know, but the kind of creativity that's showing up isn't just like, it isn't individual. It's like there's something more that can happen when people find their right people.
Right. They find the right people and their right purpose.
Yeah, it's like many people in the last 40 years, it was all about what's your individual dream. You know, you have your soulmate and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, some of us did that fairly well.
Or not so well.
If some of us not so well. But there's something where you go, okay, I can have my individual life and have that be, you know, fairly wonderful. But then it's kind of boring. It's like, well, what's possible if you have other really amazing people? Then what could we do together?
Wow. So that's what I'm getting the sense of. If we have a planet like that, just imagine. Yeah.
Well, you're right, Alan. And maybe, you know, you and I share a love for, I think, you know, mid-20th century New York artists.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll have to talk about that sometime.
Yes, yes. I'd love to talk about the whole history of art and what that means in terms of consciousness.
It's amazing. But one of the shortcomings of, because, you know, recently reading a lot about what was turning those artists on, the artists and the writers and the dancers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the worldview, really it was an evolutionary worldview that was inspiring them. But sometimes the limitation with art is, the art is an incredibly powerful transmitter of consciousness, but the lives that the artists live are incongruent with the message.
Well, that, I think, was the reason they went to their art, because they couldn't deal with their lives, so they had to express it through some medium.
It's right. And so now, you know, with the Evolutionary Collective, and Patricia and I have decided to be based in New York City initially, you know, we'll see where it goes. But the idea is that initially people come together and the medium of the art is the relationships we share. Mm-hmm. And that grows, and the medium of the art, you know, ultimately should be the lives that everyone's living individually while being connected collectively. And those lives, like any work of art, should be so beautiful that they attract other people to want to live lives as beautiful.
And the contributions that people are making, because when you come together with other people that are conscious, you feel that great sense of possibility that you can actually do something larger.
And you know, the other thing this all brings up is what another kind of theory I'm working on is that what I call the paradigm of experience. So we're no longer subjective to this objective worldview where science says the world is only one way, but we start to rely on our own subjective experience for valuing reality. And that's a huge shift in paradigms.
No, you are so, it's such a pleasure talking with you, because you're so exactly, you know, dancing in the same world that we're in.
Right, because we're being infused by the same consciousness in different forms. But tell me how it relates to what you're doing.
What you mean, what you just said?
Yes, the paradigm of experience.
Well, I think, I'll tell you, there's probably different ways you could think about it. I mean, one of the things that really strikes me in terms of this new consciousness is, as you're saying, in a previous, more Newtonian view of reality, you know, there's infinite space and then things in the space that bang around.
Right.
And you know, you are somehow an invisible observer of all that, and you can make laws about how all the banging around will happen. In the world that I think we're all opening up to, the consciousness we're opening up to, you know, you start to see something, not just things in space, but you start to see that there's fields of relatedness and relationship in a more Newtonian worldview is sort of like the not real thing that connects the real things.
Right, I like that. I mean, I understand what you mean. It's a little intellectual, but I get it.
yeah, right. It's the relationship is sort of not really material, and the things that are connected by relationships are the real stuff.
And you're turning that around, right?
We're turning it around. The relationship is the real thing, and a relationship is a subjective experience. It's an intersubjective experience, but it's real. It has a quality, and you know, and getting intimately acquainted with that quality and then bringing that quality into the relationships in all of your life will transform the things.
Yeah.
Right. And I think just even without relationship, I mean relationships part, but just valuing one's own true subjective experience is part of this translation to a new paradigm.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely. That,
I mean, I would question whether it's possible to have an experience that isn't in some way in relationship.
Yeah, I mean, what about just on your own through meditation? Maybe that, you know, because you talk about meditation, and maybe you'll talk about it a little more. But that's a relationship with one's deeper self in that sense, right?
Right, which is right. That, well, I would say that's true, and that which is still a relationship.
Right.
You know, in essence. But that's kind of neither here nor there.
Right, right, right.
Potentially. But I agree with the sentiment that you're bringing out, which is, the real stuff of reality is experience.
It's the only stuff of reality when you come down to it. And not just experience, I mean, this is where I go, but the feeling you get from that experience. We do everything for a feeling. We have all these experiences because we want a feeling, a sensation, a thrill, you know, to feel love. Or I mean, so it really comes down to that.
Right, right.
And then how do we, and then if we're having new feelings like, the artists or just some people in your course. I mean, I'm sure there are no words for some of the spaces people reach. So we're building a new culture based on these feelings.
That's absolutely
and just,
right.
Just to underline again, though, the particular medium of our whole exploration is for people that want to discover the edge of consciousness that has to do with what's happening between us.
And what do you mean by that?
I guess that's what you mean. So if we were doing art, you know, rather than being an individual artist or a soloist, it's discovering what can happen when you're playing together. So it is a cultural, you know, it's a collective medium. And how do you activate the magic and how do you be in flow? And, you know, there's the dance, you know, it's like it's two people dancing, not one person.
Right, and that actually expands us. If you've ever improvised, you do come up with ideas and concepts that you can never come up with on your own.
Yeah, right. And it's not better or worse, but it really is different. You know, that's a particular distinction where most, a lot of spiritual work, including, you know, to become enlightened on your own, is an individual path.
Mm. I like what you're saying there. Were you going to say something, Jeff, there?
I'm backtracking.
Okay. Okay, that's all right. We're just,
I will anyway. It's just this is partly for your benefit.
Yeah, good.
You know,
backtracking.
William James said that the world was created from pure experience. Mm. And Leo Tolstoy said that speech is the medium through which knowledge evolves, and art is the medium through which feeling evolves.
I like that. I mean, I think we evolve through feeling and not knowledge, because, I mean, yes, it's all good. And where we're going is into the unknown. And I think that's what you both are in these courses are trying to move people towards.
You know, definitely. And I would say feeling evolves ahead of knowledge. So one of the guys in the course last week was telling us about some research he'd done, which showed that, you know, most great scientific advances are anticipated in art, you know, a century before they're nailed down into science. Because art has a beautiful ambiguity to it, which allows you to kind of work in a medium that's less defined, and so you can reach further into the future.
That's exactly what I'm writing about, and what I say is that the artists perceive new patterns, create a new cosmos out of the chaos, because they're not so restricted by the culture that has dogmatized us to see reality in a particular way. So the artist's role is really to create a new awareness of patterns of information, or I call it formations, or bringing information, and that creates a neurological shift, because as we take in new patterns, we're rearranging how we can think about reality. That opens up new fields of feelings.
Beautiful.
What I would say then, Alan, given what you're working on, the evolutionary collective is us coming together to reach into the feelings, which are the new patterns of relatedness. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe there are going to be neurological shifts that are happening that make those higher order relationships more natural.
And humanity.
You know, for all
yes.
of us.
Well, it takes people holding the space, creating a new neural net of possibilities that creates the new reality. So exactly. I mean, I see that's how our collective evolution is happening. As you hold that new space or that old space for more of a public understanding, you're creating something and making it available for people to tap into. So thank you. I mean, do you have to go? Do you want to talk a little more? I mean, what's your schedule there?
Yeah, we should probably go, but I think we really hit it, Alan. This was you're a great person to talk to about this.
Well, I'd love to become involved in your course or be a part of it or something.
You're, like, insanely
Definitely.
Aligned.
Yes. Okay. Good. Well, so, and like, there's more. I'll show you more of what I've been working on. But
to see it.
If we want to let anybody know, we don't have to. But
yes, tell me.
We do a 3-day intensive that is where we take people into that space and they begin to be there, right? You know, and discover where it happens in consciousness and in culture, blah, blah, blah. So there's a 3-day, and then after that, people make a choice as to whether or not they really want to engage in that level of committedness for the year. We're doing one in February, 8, 9, 10 in New York, and also in Philadelphia, 15, 16, and 17. And that'll be the entryway to the year long.
And that's on your website, evolutionarycollective.com?
Yeah.
That's right, Alan.
So wait, just tell me, though, when you do the introduction, and then how does the year long course work? Is it once a month, or what is it?
The year long is 3 days live in New York every 4 months. So everybody flies in, you know, for 3 days every 4 months. And then every 8 weeks, you know, like after, you know, we meet together 8 weeks later, there's a virtual 1 day so that everybody kind of collects in the various communities that they're in. And then we're on the phone doing a virtual 1 day that's pretty intense and always surprising.
Well, just tell me, what do you hope people will then get at? Why do they do this, and what do they hope to get out of it?
Well, I think they do it because – to be honest, Alan, first of all, when Patricia and I started work, we started teaching together last summer, and, you know, we didn't know each other that well, but we walked into a room to do a 1 day event, and the experience of consciousness was so potent in the room before we got started that one of the reasons people do this is because they experience things in the field that, you know, in that space that's being held that they've never experienced before.
Yeah.
And it opens them up to possibilities they hadn't imagined before. And then those possibilities start to manifest.
Right.
In relationship, in their lives. I mean, people are changing so much. And it's fascinating to see change occur without changing being the topic that we're going into. Sometimes I feel like in our longer events, no matter what we're talking about, profound, spontaneous healings just occur.
Right.
And someone will just drop a lifetime worth of baggage and that we've never even mentioned.
Yeah, the other thing too, Alan, it's people like you. I mean, it's really, there are people that, you know, we're like, how do you get together in a powerful way ongoingly with other people that are teachers where we're not trying to be like, it's all about us, because it's not.
Right.
You know, and very most teachers, it's still about the teaching and the teacher. And
right. It's about what I know, and I'm going to tell you what I know. That's what it, yeah.
And we're facilitating. There are times when we do, there are like 24 different, you know, evening or, you know, sessions where we get together that way. And one of them, you know, it's like, it was about a month ago. It was so out of control. I mean, something was so happening. We're just like standing in the back going, huh? You know, like, so we don't get to be like brilliant teachers at all.
That's great.
All you do is watch something take off with these beautiful, brilliant people. Mm-hmm. And I think if anything, part of what we're doing is we're gathering like the best people we can find so that all that DNA is kind of mixing. And then people are truly creating something that I think will make a lasting effect on human consciousness.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. And I love what you said before, I think before we started, that it's no longer about me working on myself. It's about...
And mostly, you know, the people, you and I know a lot of the same people.
Right.
We're just over it.
Right.
You know, you don't want to get certified in anything. You just don't give a shit. But right. It doesn't mean that you don't want to... Like, there's a longing to come together in some kind of meaningful way that isn't in those constructs. It's like those constructs don't work for us anymore.
Right. And that's why what you're doing is really going into the unknown, creating the unknown territory.
Yeah. And gathering the right people for the right mission.
Yeah. And it really is, Alan. I mean, it really is.
It's wild.
Beyond an edge. In terms of being in the unknown, that's my experience leading it. You know, the transformation that's happening with Patricia and I is wild, and it's you know, we're transforming as much, if not more, than anybody else. So there really is a collective event happening.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for the conversation. Maybe we'll do a television show about this at some point too.
I would love to do that.
That would be fun.
Okay, so again, the only way to really find you is the evolutionarycollective.com website.
That's right. Yeah. That's the way to find us.
And you've got his email and stuff.
Yeah, you have my email. And I'm also going to post this on my website. This will also be on bbs.com. I'll link you to this interview. And then
cool. We'll promote it on our stuff.
Right, and then let's talk about how I can maybe just do like a little – guest appearance or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we will. Definitely.
I mean, we would love to explore how to, you know, how our paths will intertwine, you know, because Patricia and I are committed to people, and we're also committed to New York.
Yeah, we are.
Right. And what I think, I mean, I don't know if you do this, but I like to bring perception or the idea of perception or how to break outside of our cultural boundaries to increase creativity, to increase our awareness of our creative potential.
That's fantastic.
So I look a lot at where we've been conditioned to see only one reality and then to see how there's much more. And even within a single piece of art, how there's so much more that's available if we know how to read a particular image. Let's say.
Yeah, that's clear.
Right. You're totally right.
So it's exciting. I'm really happy you're doing what you're doing, and I think it's really amazing. I think you've hit on something, and I hope people listening will really tune in and take advantage of evolving their own self and the collective in general. So
great.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity, Alan.
Thank you. both. And I've been talking. Yes. Any final words there? Trisha? No?
Okay. I'm really good. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks a lot.
Enjoy.
All right. We will be in touch. I've been talking to Patricia Albert and Jeff Carrera about the evolutionarycollective.com and about their workshop, their courses, their ventures into awakening, collective awakening. Thank you for listening tonight. I'm Alan Steinfeld. And if you want to reach me, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and also check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. Bye now.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Waking up in the middle of my life, nothing's what it seems. Feel the fire come alive. Feel the fire
in the fire
come alive.